Yeah, good afternoon from my side as well, and welcome to our conference call about the results of fiscal 2013. I have a full house here today. Dieter will kick it off with the key numbers, then Max will talk about our investments, and last but not least, Michael will wrap it up and focus on the way forward. Before I hand over to Dieter, allow me a quick remark with regards to timing. We intend to limit this call to 2 hours. So after roughly 1 hour for the presentations, we should have another hour left for the questions and answers. And I hope that it's sufficient to cover most of your important questions. If not, you may, of course, call the investor relations team afterwards. Let me remind you that we will host 3 additional analyst meetings, one already tomorrow in Frankfurt, and the other 2 next week, one in London, one in Paris. All right, that's all from my side, and with that, I hand over to Dieter.
Okay, so good afternoon, good morning, wherever you have dialed in. I have a real pleasure to present you the Q4 numbers of Allianz and the full year results 2013. Starting with the Q4 highlights, operating profit and shareholders' net income slightly up against Q4 in 2012, but actually Q4 had some special one-offs you should consider. There is on one hand the write-downs we did for restructuring the Korean Life business. I will touch on it later. That made about 144 million euros in operating profit. We have some good 90 million in various restructuring charges in Italy, Belgium, but also Germany. And we have additionally, which hit shareholders' net income, an additional tax charge in Italy of 116 million euro, which was based on a late announcement of the Italian government actually to increase the regular tax rate for the financial service industry in Italy by 8.5 percentage points. And as Italy was for us in particular successful in 2013, this cost us quite a lot of money, but is affecting all insurance companies and banks this depending on their net income in the same way. So that were special effects which have to be added back maybe to the Q4 numbers if you want to make it more comparable with the flow you got used to in the first 3 quarters. So let's move on to the overall results. 111 billion revenues for the year is a record number for the group. And this group is achieved despite really a very strong Q4, in particular at year-end. The foreign currency effects included in the number are 1.8 billion euros, so that means on a like-on-like basis we would have achieved 113 billion revenues. Operating profits with 10.1, we are above the number we actually had given you as an updated outlook in Q3, where we believe we would end up a little bit short of 10 billion. And I think the difference is very much an excellent P&C result in the fourth quarter, which was in particular driven by very low net cat in the last 2 months. We had heavy cat loads in the second and third quarter, and then almost nothing in the fourth quarter in relative terms. So let's move on to our capital position. Shareholders' equity over 12 months unchanged, and a number of positive and negative effects. So yes, 6 billion net profit added, 2 billion paid out dividend, 1.2 billion lost in foreign currency translation, and then the remaining difference is in particular lost unrealized gains, which make the bulk of this. That ends up then in an unchanged Solvency I ratio, where, to remind you, the Solvency I ratio is not sensitive to fixed income valuation because bonds are considered as amortized cost. However, as we have redeemed a hybrid of 1.5 billion, so our capital base got smaller in this calculation relative to the shareholders' equity. Economic solvency up, reflecting two main effects. On one hand, the upward trend of the interest rate curves, in particular in Q4, that helps always all the life valuation, as you know. And the other important factor is actually the reduction of credit risk we see everywhere. And the main contributor in our credit risk valuation are European financials, so the bank. Then our diversification away from bank and also Southern European government bonds, plus the better spread environment for European government bonds itself. So all in all, credit risk went down despite the re-risking effort we did in our investment portfolio as announced and as Max will talk about it in the next presentation. I will spend a few more seconds on the slide because we are making here a statement that our economic solvency will, when we move to Solvency II final calibration, will probably go down, let's say, to around 30 points. So, is this tragic? No, because whether you have a Solvency II ratio of 220 or 180 or 190, that is really not making any difference, because the target is 100% Solvency II ratio, and certainly as a group we want to keep a buffer above it, that we can also stand a new renewed financial crisis far in the future or near in the future. So therefore, it is more an announcement of a number change and not of a content change, because we are still running under the Standard & Poor's model AA, the surplus margin, which actually expanded slightly during the year 2003. So our capital is as strong as ever, and I would call our current position absolutely fit and proper for purpose in Solvency II and whatever else is coming. We have, of course, deducted from the economic solvency ratio our new dividend, as we are proposing it, of €5.30, which is 18% above the last one. Now on page 9, let's turn to the growth numbers in P&C. The top line face value, the reduction 0.7%, explained by FX impact. Heavily impact in FX is Turkey, Latin America, but also Australia, where we lost, for example, €300 million due to the value reduction of the Australian dollar. So when we correct for FX, also take out the acquisitions which were positive in the year, and then take out the crop where we had the partial exit, as I explained already in previous quarters, our underlying growth 0.5%, driven by France, that is still follow-on and the acquisition, but then in particular Allianz Worldwide Partners and Turkey, which had a very strong internal growth. And you see, yes, Turkey, you will probably ask questions, this is a problem with the lira tanking so strongly, and we paid the money in summer where the lira was more expensive. Actually, when you run the DCF models, you use the new exchange rate and you apply the increased interest rates, what we are earning, in particular for the pension business, that completely equals user CF models even by using an extended weight. Page 11, the PNC, underlying PNC results. Well, it was a year where we actually used up more or less fully our CAT budget. We have budgeted for the year 2013 the CAT at 3.2 percentage points and the CAT load is 2.9, so it is very much a full utilization of the CAT budget. So the increased CAT losses of the year were very much numerically equalized by the higher runoff ratio, although the two are absolutely not connected. Why is the runoff ratio higher than 2012? Well, actually, when you look at all the positive runoffs of the OEs, we are very much at 2012 level, but in 2012 we had a negative reserve strengthening in the U.S., and if you add this back, because the U.S. was put flat in reserve movement 2013, are ending up with 2013 runoff number. And I think it reflects three things. Our anyway conservative reserving policy, which should lead to a 2.5% to 3% runoff result over a longer period. Our 10-year average is 0.2 percentage points. And this combined and aligned with a very friendly underwriting cycle, plus the almost deflationary trends you see in Europe and also in the U.S., which allows us to benefit from very low claims inflation. So in summary, the 2 percentage points improvement in combined ratio is very much linked to underlying loss ratio improvements. Actually, the expense ratio deteriorated by 50 basis points. So it is all better underwriting results, reflects our underwriting and pricing discipline and all the actions we have taken, and should lead us also in an even more exciting year 2014. Page 13, the operating profits by major country shows you that our combined ratios are quite nicely spread. Clearly, the profit leader in 2013 is Italy, therefore we had to pay also the higher taxes there. 78% combined ratio in Italy is also in the underlying numbers a slight improvement over 2012, but in particular we had a higher runoff from reserves in Italy, which makes almost 7 percentage points for the country. I think on the other one, I don't need to touch, maybe Germany, because we have this target out there for 2014, the 99.5% below 100. That was for us a very nice positive surprise, because after the heavy weather-related losses in Q2 and Q3, we did not believe that we would touch the 100 in 2013. And you can also see that the number includes 8.5 percentage points of this CAT events. Our normalized assumption for Germany is 4%, that we would have ended with normal CAT load the year at 95.3, demonstrating underlying that we are really on track with achieving our 2014 target as we presented to you in the May Capital Market. PNC, current yield on debt securities, next page. Current yield further going down in the year 2013, 30 basis points down. The reduction in yields was probably a bit more heavy than you would expect from a normal runoff of the portfolio. We reduced in the second half 2012 and also beginning 2013 our exposure to Italian and Spanish government bonds, which certainly were not replaced by equal yielding investments. So the trend for next year, we will see further reductions in the current yields, but at a reduction at a slower speed, because reinvestment yields are still below 3.3 we have currently in the portfolio, Actually, in Q4, we were at 81 basis points, so that would for 12 months already give you some 3.25% yield as a starting point for 2014. Now turning to life. Actually, clearly the biggest success in growth for the year, 8.5% top line growth for a large global portfolio is a tremendous number, in particular as a lot of it was achieved in matured markets and in markets where the economy in general is not doing well. I think we are outperforming, particularly in Southern Europe, clearly the market, starting with Spain, where we are in a shrinking market, 14% up, and also in Italy, the market has some growth, but certainly not the 32% you see in our numbers. It is the continued success of our new unit-linked product, which sold in total or created 1.3 billion new premium for the whole year. U.S. looks flat in euro, 4% up in U.S. dollars. Here, actually, we closed the gap in fixed index annuities, which we created in the second and third quarter, and we are back to our old market in the fixed index annuity markets in Q4. That should be around 16% market share, but of course, Q4 numbers are still a bit preliminary on market shares. Let's turn to the operating profit in life. It is down against 2012, and in particular, the fourth quarter number was lower, maybe also lower than some of you have expected. There are a couple of special effects. There is, on one hand, the Korean case I have already spoken about. Korea affected the investment part because we increased some reserves for long-tail cancer and rare disease products. We wrote down attached DAC to these product lines, and also we built a restructuring charge of 34 million for Korea. The next special effect is actually a fair value valuation of foreign currency exposure balance sheets, in particular the German life business that have invested also in foreign currency bonds. With the strength of the euro, FX effect is immediately hitting the P&L. Last but not least, we are using derivatives for our duration management, as many people do, to extend our duration. That created nice profits in all the last 16 or 20 quarters, probably with falling yields. Q4, of course, had a hike up in the yields, so therefore they ended up with negative numbers, which is not surprising. Last point, in Germany, we increased our policyholder participation in Germany for the year to strengthen our local policyholder surplus fund and also the solvency. That is an investment. It's the strategic strength of the business and should be being paid back by better new business in the future. Page 21. Value of new business was certainly disappointing in 2012, has recovered back to almost 1 billion euros. The 2.1 new business margin should not be the end of the story. The last quarter was already at 2.6%, and when you would recalculate the new business for the last 12 months with the interest rates of year-end, then we would have shown already 2.4%. I give you this as if calculation more as a starting point for 2014, that actually a 2.5% new business margin is possible when interest rates stay where they were end of December. Our page 2023 is the usual checkpoint. Are we still safely ahead of our guarantees? And when you look at the numbers, the safety margin over our guarantees has not changed a lot. We are still very much ahead of our guarantee, which did reduce by 10 basis points. The current yields number and also the net harvesting number were influenced by the individual movements I have explained before. I think for 2014, the numbers are actually still very good. We had as a margin always said for the year 2013 that our expected level is some 75 basis points. I think we would not change this outlook. 25. Market consistent embedded value nicely up, driven by three factors. Number one, we have always a built-in strong contribution for the in-force business as our investment yields are above what is used for the market consistent calculation, so the risk-free rates. Then we added $1 billion in new business value, economic variance, in particular the lift up of the swap curve helped of course a lot. The 2.1 billion euro net capital movement are dividends cleaned up by the life units to the center as part of our activity to centralize more of our funds. Is this a sustainable number of our life segment? We see for the next period actually the dividend more at the range of 1.4 billion euros. We had two special effects in the numbers coming from Germany and Italy, which are not repeatable. So now turning to the assets. Well, the title says Euro weighs on assets under management, and actually the euro-dollar exchange rate is the biggest mover of our assets under management number. Our assets under management, I'm only looking at the third-party money, went down by 5.4%, and out of the 5.4%, 4.4% is the exchange rate impact. The outflows make 1.4%, and the market value change is just 0.1%. And the market value change is an offsetting between the equity funds and the fixed income funds. So overall, a very strong asset management base. In particular, the average assets under management base during the year are the driver for the record high fees you see on the following page. With 7.1 billion euros, we reached a new record level on fees, 6% up after the softening of the dollar. Is actually an improved fee income from both from PIMCO as well as Allianz Global Investors, which are adding nicely to the overall fee position. Also, a very important point for you is how did the assets under management margin develop. The average for the year 2013 is here shown at 44.9, Q4 standalone. It's 45.5, so 0.6 points higher than the average of the year. Also, a good finish in Q4. Translating the fee into operating profits. Operating profits 7% up, could have been 10%. So we still count that the dollar helps us in the future. And it is very much volume and margin driven, as the slide shows you here, where on performance fees, you see already the first step to normalization. We are 250 million lower than before, and this trend will continue you also in 2014. Please remember that at a couple of private funds, mainly investing into subprime mortgages and really creating fantastic returns for the investors and also very decent performance fees for the fund managers. And we are currently building up a new generation of funds, and I hope we can talk about it in coming quarters, but at the moment we don't see any performance fees coming out of this. Now, finalizing the segment analysis by a short look to the corporate segment, a minus of €1 billion is a very good end of the year. We had a number of one-offs which on investment income and also release of some old provisions which helped here, but also it had to compensate for higher pension costs in the year. So actually the improvements are quite nice. And also please look at the banking segment, minus €91 million for the year 2013. That is mainly driven by the restructuring costs we had to book for closing Allianz Bank Germany. So that is an amount we should not repeat. Without this, the banking result was more or less flat or close to zero in 2013. Now, summarizing operating results to the net income. As already during the first 9 months of the year, we had a good flow of realized gains, less impairments, and also less extra amortization of intangible assets. In the last quarter, we booked one further impairment on one of our private equity investments called Selecta. That is for sure now the last impairment on this investment, as we are now carrying it for in our balance sheet. So that resulted then in total in €422 million negative or non-operating items, also improved by €100 million less costs on our external debt expenses, giving an income before tax of €9.6 billion. Income tax moved up in line with the profit, but our effective tax rate could end up at 34% and could have ended here slightly below 33% without this nice year-end gift of the Italian government. And with this one, let me summarize our record revenues at €111 billion. Operating profit in absolute terms on a high level and in particular back to the level you have seen pre-financial crisis in 2006 and 2007. And as we promised, we will drive a higher dividend by moving shareholders' net income up, and we delivered on this. And all this with a strong capital and balance sheet position, a balance sheet position fit and proper for Solvency II and whatever systemic risk will bring to us.
Good morning, good afternoon. Now we go to Chapter B, the investment. Let's start with the first page, that's B3. As you can see here, there were not many changes or big changes in our structure of the portfolio overall. You can say that one-fifth of the portfolio, that's due to turnover, that means new investments. And in that respect, last year was a pretty good year with the tapering. We saw higher interest rates overall, which is positive for us. And I think we profited also from the equity movement because we invested additional money into equities but also into real estate. As you can see, we have 7% invested in equities, which includes private equity, 2% in real estate, the IFRS number, set up the hidden reserves, which are not shown according to IFRS, and also the real estate for own use.
We would have a real estate exposure of 4%, that means 22.7 billion overall. There were no big changes on the duration side. On the life side, the asset is still at 7.6 as duration, that is unchanged. And overall, there was a small change on the P&C side, that is due to a very high gap in the yield curve. That means you are rewarded if you go a little bit longer in that respect. Now turning to page B4, that is giving you at least an impression of the investment performance. It's according to IFRS, that means not really total return, but it starts with the current yield we have, 3.8%, and then realized gains and losses and impairments. If you add up then also investment expenses and the trading results, the IFRS yield of 4.0. Then, and that is only due to the rising interest rates, we have lost some of our unrealized gains. But also, we have the rolling down the yield curve effect overall, and that comes up in the end or adds up to a total performance of 1.1%. In comparison to that, the Bund 10 years lost 2.5% and US aggregate 2.0, means overall it's okay. I do not think it's satisfying, but I think overall in this market it's okay. Now turning to page 5, what we have changed, only a selection out of that. As I already mentioned, we increased the equity portion by actively buying equity. That comes up to 6.1 billion. Also real estate, infrastructure, renewables, additional 2.7 billion. We invested overall, that consumed around 1 billion additional risk capital, that's the notification effect, and then also more alternative debt, we get much higher yields, 3.3 billion. And on the corporate side, mainly switching from bank debt to non-financial, and still, I think, overall, as a market, I weight in that respect. We especially reduced the tier 1 and tier 2, as we did also in the year 2012. We have to be aware that there will be stress test this year, and due to the unsecurity, we reduced overall our exposure to financial treasuries. It was made that we do not want to have these concentration risks in the local portfolios, and means we reduced also peripherals, but also especially the concentration risk in the OE portfolios. This reduction overall cost us some performance, or to say that the best performing fixed income assets were Italian bonds and Spanish bonds. I need to say that also. But I think we have still a lot of concentration also if you think of the indices itself in that respect. Now turning to D6, what we did on the direct financing side, that includes debt and equity. These are all the investments which are not listed. As you can see, we grew nearly in all segments, especially so mortgages and also private placements. And right now, and that is also very positive, increase our real estate exposure by more than 2 billion overall. Right now, we have invested around 12% in these non-listed securities or assets overall. Our overall target would come up to 80 billion, but that's a moving target. As you know, it's a little bit difficult because it is not so easy to increase the portfolio in these sectors. Now, turning to page B7, these are the new investments, the new investment years of 2013. As you can see on the P&C side, overall the reinvestment yield was only at 2.5% compared to 3.0% in the year before, and on the life side it was at 3.2% due to the longer duration. And the comparison to last year, that was at 3.6% overall. What's interesting, real estate, real assets overall, including dividends from equities, there we achieved a current yield of 5%. That seems not very logical. Usually in these assets, the current yield is from the beginning lower than on the bond side. That makes, I think, especially these asset classes right now relatively attractive to pure fixed income investments. Now turning to page B8. We have seen already, I think, some more details in the presentation of DITA. Therefore, I think I should not explain it in too many details. You can see overall on the side, that's on the right-hand side of the picture, that we have a reinvestment yield of 3.2%, and that compares to a guarantee. Average guarantee in the life business of only 1.2%. To remind you, last year, that means in the year 2012, the average guarantee for new business was at 1.7%. That means we are really striving for hybrid products, products with a lower guarantee, but that's a positive story for the customer, also with high yields. It means usually there's an equity element in there that makes it very attractive for the customer. Now turning to page 9, the last page overall, we are positive for the economic development worldwide. That means estimated GDP growth of 3%, tapering will go on overall. Unfortunately, the spreads will remain tight. It means it's difficult to earn additional spreads on the fixed income side. Emerging markets, I think, are not one market. You have to differentiate country per country. At least the countries with an accounting deficit overall have also weakened currencies overall. Therefore, we have to differentiate what we are already also doing. But we are, I think, pretty optimistic for this year overall for the capital markets. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This is Mike. If this is optimistic, then I'm optimistic as well, and I'm turning to page 2 of my presentation. Just looking at 2013, I would say profit growth, capital ratios, operating performance, and the ongoing improvements of our operating models are good. Obviously difficult, as everybody knows, is the reinvestment environment. The tapering discussion and the influence on our fixed income management was difficult, and I'm as unhappy as you about many uncertainties left regarding regulation or regulatory items. Now, obviously, the concentration of Nat Cat in Germany was bad. Dieter has elaborated on that. Foreign exchange rates are jumping more down than up. So that's bad for 2013, hopefully opportunity for 2014. If I look at the business highlights in 2013, I'm turning to page 3 now, is that we grew our customer base by 5 million. Three of that is related to our acquisition in Turkey. 2 million is organic growth. That's a good message. We've done the shift to what we call capital-light products on the life side. I think that was very successful. If I look at Italy, if I look at Germany, then we've come up with very attractive products, modular products. That's a continuation of our product strategy in Germany, and also to see some growth in the fixed indexed annuities in the U.S., where we maintained our strong market position. Now, on the asset management side, we are diversifying away from one name. I think it's good that the market has acknowledged that. Morningstar has named two PIMCO guys as income managers of the year. Obviously, Turkey is a good investment, good acquisition, and Dieter has elaborated how the trade-off works between currency movements and interest rates. And then I would like to add again, which is important for our marketing, that we've been named the sustainability leader by Dow Jones Indices, and then the AA rating upgrade to stable, and the good assessment of our Allianz risk management capabilities. I'm turning to page 4 now. A lot of this has been said now. I think the result, looking at the increase the year 2012 is good. I've read a couple of your comments this morning. Most of you said it's in line with expectation, a little stronger on P&C, a little weaker on life, but I think that has been explained, and that was good investment into future performance on the life side. Now, we've promised you our meetings over the last year, we try to improve the translation between operating profit and net income. That was part of our fierce discussion about, you know, where is the money and how can we get to the money. So I'm turning to page 5 now, and here you see a couple of things. First, the operating profit. Then you see that the non-operating items are basically not as dominant as they used to be in the past years. I think that's a good message. And then the translation is 60% instead of the 54% in last year. So as I keep a very high regard to trust and, you know, communication and delivery on communication, I think that's one of the points that I'm really proud about. Another point, page 6, trust on communication. You wanted to know us how are we investing the money. And we promise you we're going to give you an explanation for that. Now, taking into consideration that we are doing here a little mix of net income, of cash flows, risk capital, that's as good as an approximation as we can get to. We communicate with 40% for dividends, 20% for internal growth, 20% for external growth, 20% to allow Max to buy into real assets. Now, on the right-hand side, you can see that internal growth amounted to a risk capital of additional 1.1 billion. External growth was 1 billion. And the shift to real assets cost us another billion of risk capital. 2 billion were cashed out for the dividend for last year. So that pretty much used the net income number according to what we set and promised. Now, on the acquisition strategy, you know, we are trying to prove that we keep rational and don't want to spend too much money on it, but do some smart stuff that helps us to gain scale and distribution power. We've done the insurance distribution agreement with HSBC for continental Europe, very much in line with our Turkey strategy. Then we did the acquisition of Yapı Kredi, entered into a European automotive partnership with Ford. That didn't cost us anything. And then we are, as you know, in exclusive negotiations with Unipol in Italy. So I think that's all very consistent with our communication. Turning to page 8, the supervisory board yesterday has authorized the announcement of our dividend proposal. That's 5:30. I read a couple of comments that that is short of the expectation by some 8 cents. I think it's an exact translation, hopefully, of our 30-40% payout ratio. And again, I'm happy that with 80% improvement over 2014, at least you don't scream at us when we knock at your door tomorrow or the days after. Now, we obviously totally understand the capital management issue, and I would like to thank everybody here for participating in our investor survey. That was a very clear point. By the way, not coming as a surprise. So we've talked to our supervisory board yesterday, saying that we need to table this for 2014. The minute we have a little bit more clarity, what comes out of Solvency II, what comes out of the global systemic discussion. And we want to come out to you with, you know, what is the capital management going to go forward, linking it to cash flows and excess capital, during the course of the year. Now, there was a question, are we going to do this in our Capital Markets Day? I can't promise that because I don't know when we'll be ready, but we are targeting to do this during the course of the year. So we won't postpone it to next year. That's the message, really. We do have a couple of interesting initiatives, and I'm turning to page 10 now. For 2014, obviously, on top of everything, is the target achievement in P&C in Germany. We have some integration work to do in Turkey. Our merger in Benelux is working very well, but we have to finalize that. We've just started last month the Iberian platform in Brazil with good expectations. There's some more work to do on Allianz Worldwide Partners. We are now integrating a health portfolio from Allianz France. We have started our IT center consolidation project that gets us down to 6 instead of 140 today. That is obviously something that will run for not 2014, but we are targeting 2017 to be ready. Then restructuring Fireman's Fund, obviously. We do make some good progress in China. We have a reinsurance program where we will increase the cessions to Allianz so that we have a higher volume than to negotiate with our reinsurance partners. And we have some FTE reduction hopes that Dieter has alluded to. On the product side, we are full speed working on our modular products, learning from markets where we've already introduced them. Telematics and Fusion, our algorithm machine, is being used. We do have a strategy to deal with the mid-corp P&C side. We have some very promising products in Germany on the care side. It goes also for retail and corporate care, but also for corporate health. Quite interesting progress here. Obviously, we have some work to do on non-traditional fixed income, and our global corporate pension initiatives is getting traction as well. On the distribution side, we do further roll out for our agency future program, our multi-access strategy, our digital agency in Italy that we've talked to you about. FastQuote is now being exported in some other markets. Global Automotive is making good progress. Our broker initiative and, you know, getting live into our HSBC distribution agreements. Now on page 11, we've shown you the Southern Europe where obviously, the business environment is difficult. We've been able to achieve a 3% growth there on the P&C side against a declining market with a great combined ratio of 84% across all these five countries. A lot of that is really technology-driven. So here's the rollout plan on the right-hand side for FastQuote, for telematics, digital agency, we are still in discussion how fast we can transfer that to other markets. And on the Iberian platform, I talked about Brazil, and now we are checking on the remaining countries, Mexico and Argentina. On page 12, the de-risking and product innovation, I don't want to talk too much about that because I think that has been covered. There is quite some progress in increasing the share of protection, health, and unit linked, but with 31%, we are aware we are lagging behind some of our competitors. But I think to maintain the growth while you're shifting the product side in a very heavily influenced tied agent market like Germany is a good indicator. You know that everybody here has understood what needs to be done, and the marketing has been good because there was a lot of resistance on the media side at least. On the asset management side, we do have a couple of product innovations, and they are already contributing to our third-party business. We've lined up a couple of things here on Allianz Global Investor. I've just been in the UK. We've got a lot of praise for our infrastructure debt team there. The active ETFs from PIMCO are working great. We do have over 20 billion now of that. So there's something happening on the management side that keeps me pretty optimistic, which gets me to the operating profit outlook. So it's 10 billion plus minus 500. I think that is strong and confident. You know that we've always shied away a little bit from touching the 10 billion. Now we have them as our midpoint. And yes, you're right. We expect major delivery on the P&C side. There's hopefully some upside on the life and on the asset management side. If Dieter wants to make a big bonus, then he will drive corporate down. And with that one, oh, by the way, happy birthday to Dieter because it's his birthday today. With the outlook for a great bonus. So with that one, I would like to stop. And then you want to start the Q&A?
Yeah, we have to take questions now. Thank you, Michael.
Okay, thank you. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star or asterisk followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. We will now take our first question from Michael Huttner from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, and well done. And I love this format, so thank you very much. Just a couple of questions. The first one on slide 851. Dieter, you said on your presentation that we shouldn't be worried about solvency, but here it does say we should worry about solvency. Significant uncertainties remain. Is there any way that you can allay my fears? I'm sure the market's happy, but I was kind of concerned here. Maybe I don't know what you can say. And then more detailed point, kind of nitty-gritty point. So non-life, as you said, was still improving, could you possibly say which country is improving it, just to give us a feel for the granularity in terms of the underlying, so I guess excluding reserve releases and all that. My guess is it's Germany, but you're in lots of countries, and if I could add a few more to mine, it would be lovely. Thank you.
I would like to answer the second question.
Thank you.
That's obviously Germany, because with a 99% combined, they are far away from 95. That is the target, and then obviously we need further fireman's fund. Then we're going to see some improvements in Turkey, obviously from the acquisition, and hopefully some movement in France. And if I look at currency, I think there's opportunity here as well. If I look at Australia and other markets.
Brilliant, thank you.
Yeah, I think I have maybe to make my point on the solvency too more clear. We have put the page in and also the explanation that you are not getting fixated on this 220% solvency ratio and state this as the holy grail to distinguish between what is good and bad. We don't know yet the final solvency II ratio, very simple, because EIOPA as well as the EU Commission are frantically working on completing all the technical notes. And there is on one hand the delegated acts, that are the papers to be written by the EU Commission, and then there are the technical papers to be written by EIOPA. In total, we are missing at the moment 61 technical notes which are explaining and detailing calculation to be done in our models. Plus, we have an internal model approval process where a college of more than a dozen supervisors has to agree on all the calculation procedures to be done. That means what we are saying is that the number will change, not that the quality is changed. And I think here is very much number one-on-one translated into quality, and that is, I think, the wrong approach. In the end, a lot of insurance companies are still fighting and hoping that they get somewhere close to the 100% Solvency II ratio. We are starting at the moment with 220, and we are talking maybe after all calibration it ends up, let's say, at 180. So what is the problem with 180? 180 will not impact our decision to invest into risk, to invest in new external growth and internal growth, or our dividend policy. As Michael said, the dividend policy will be driven by investment opportunities in the market, the cash flows produced, and nothing else. Our Solvency II ratio is not a hurdle which stands in the way. And that was the only message we are trying to make. And personally, I'm not able to explain to anybody whether 180 or 220 is a better ratio. Yes, it's a different number, but it has not any quality linked to it, because the whole level, what is good and a bad calibration, that we will know in a couple of years when we have all started to use Solvency II. I am very relaxed, because whatever would be a problem for us, then the rest of the industry is really in trouble, and therefore we take it really from a leading position and not from a depressed position.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Peter Elliott from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. The first thing, I'm sorry to visually follow up on my question, but still just on that 20-30%, I was wondering, specifically, what is on somebody's mind is when you come to look at your capital management program across 2014, and you look at the excess capital position, it sounds very much like, from what you're saying, Peter, that 20-30% you've put in there should have no impact, really, on your view of the excess capital position. Perhaps if you could just sort of confirm that as a first point. And the second thing I was going to ask on that was that you've labelled two positives and two negatives there. Are you able to give us any sort of feel for the magnitude of those numbers at all? And then perhaps if I could just ask on a second area, in terms of the guidance you've given, specifically if I look at the asset management division, and you're guiding to $200 million lower this year than you were last year. When I look at the management of 4% lower in euro terms, margins are quite a lot better. I guess the implication is that you're factoring in some deterioration in flows, or perhaps not fully sustainable margin, which wouldn't necessarily be an unreasonable assumption, but I'm just wondering if you could perhaps clarify what's gone into your thinking there, perhaps just a broader comment. In the press release, you commented on sort of guiding to maintaining the result that you achieved for 2013. I'm just wondering what effect that what you achieved in 2013 has gone into the guidance of the group. Thank you.
Peter, first of all, I think the excess capital discussion will be finalized when we have an approved model, when all calculations are done, and we have also to define our stress buffers, because you have also remember it is a very volatile measurement, and when interest rates go substantially up, then our solvency will up substantially. So what we have at the moment is actually we are at the moment still conservative with the fungibility of the capital between the various entities. So what we have now received as guidance, so there is a very positive uplift to our number. But then there is actually the discussion at the moment that some regulators are pushing that there should be a credit risk for sovereigns being included. If this is being included, the number goes down, and the credit risk for sovereigns makes, for example, 20 points in our calculation, Would this be a level playing field with the banks? Probably no, because I think the banks would really look very ugly when they have to include a risk charge for all government bonds. Then there is, we are reducing the scope of our internal model. That means in some countries we fall back to the standard model because that reduces also the number of regulators we have to negotiate with simultaneously and makes probably the implementation simpler. Then at the moment internal pension are included and on an IFRS 19 level, but there's no risk capital charge for internal pension. So that are all things which have to be discussed, and then there is also very simple the fine-tuning of all the parameters. So how will the volatility adjuster really be calculated? What shift in the yield curve is the final outcome? That's at the moment up in the air. So that are a bit the various points to be considered, and I think we will stay in a very strong position, and as I said before, capital management and our expansion of business, our dividend policy, I do not believe it will be affected whether the number says 220 or 190. These are different criteria to decide. So on assets under management, you are actually pointing to something we have forgotten to explain. At the moment, our asset management segment has more than the two asset managers, PIMCO and Allianz Global Investors. There's always a column which is called Other. There are some small asset manager, well, actually, nice asset manager in Spain and Eastern Europe. They produce together short of 100 billion euros operating profit, and as they are being managed by the life companies, it is from a management responsibility more reasonable to show them under the life segment than under asset management. So it is actually a shift of around about 100 million euros from asset management to life. Then the second factor is performance fees, as I explained from the private funds, will not repeat itself in 2014. And the last point, we have in our outlook taken a more careful view on the dollar exchange rate, which you should also not forget. And that otherwise, we believe that the underlying performance of our two asset managers is strong as it was in 2013.
Thank you very much, Victor.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Blair Stewart from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much indeed. I've got three questions, but just perhaps one clarification before I ask them. On your asset management guidance, have you made any assumptions at all for net flows, or what are your expectations for net flows in the coming year? So my question, first question was on Germany and France and the life business, the value of new business has gone down. I suspect the answer to that is you're writing less capital-intensive business, so on a return on capital basis, it's attractive. But I don't see any noticeable change in your IRRs or your payback period, so I just wonder if you can give us a flavour for what's going on there. The second question was related to cash flow. I know you've done a lot of work to extract more cash from the life businesses, and you've given a little bit of guidance on that, but I wonder if you could talk about what initiatives, if any, are ongoing to try and improve the cash conversion and cash remittances back to group. That would be very helpful. And the third question is a short one, just if you give an update on the P&C business in Russia, which has been problematic. I just wonder if the hiccup we've seen in 2013 is genuinely a one-off, if that's going to persist. Thank you very much.
Yeah, maybe I start with the Russian issue until my guys have decided to burn her or Max answering the last question. I think Russia was a one-off in the sense that we have sort of not fast enough retreated from underwriting motor. So we've taken a hit
I think it's not substantial in the sense of the group. I cannot rule out that we have you know, some afterburner, 2014 as well, which should be less than half of what we've seen in 2013.
Okay.
Now you decided on life?
Yeah, I will answer the life question. I think in France, we are still mainly selling the traditional capitalization product, and that is has a lower new business margin than the year before. Just interest rates are still going down. I think as we are changing our portfolio, and you can see this already a bit in the last quarter out of the new business margin where France is doing better, we are now moving our product portfolio stronger to life and health, in particular the group health products, and also increasing the share in unit sale. But therefore, for the whole year, you can not see any other effects. What was the other market? Germany. Well, Germany, I mentioned that we shifted slightly the policyholder shareholder split, and that, of course, has also an impact on the new business value. But I think that is a very good investment. It's in the brand and the position in the market, and therefore that has to be seen more as a long-term investment and not as already creating benefits in 2013. I think we are not specifically making a projection for the net flows for assets under management. I think we are committed to the operating profit. And you can expect that it will create still some hiccups during the year, but when you see how small the value of the management movement was in 2013, we would expect that the movements are at a similar level.
Okay, thank you. And on capital extraction?
The capital extraction, I think we have several plans in place which are very much focusing on the large PNC units. In life, we have some extra efforts from Germany and Italy in 2013, and I think we are with 1.4 billion, that is a pretty good extraction from the life segment. Because that compares to a net income. So when we make around 3 billion operating profit, deduct a third of it for taxes. So out of 2 billion net profit, 1.4 is a 70% payout ratio. You would dream when we would deliver this number. And so therefore our life units are actually probably very much to your taste.
Yeah, I was thinking more that as the older business runs off, it will start to release capital that's not used when you write new business.
Well, our older businesses, may I remind you that we hit 8.5% top-line growth and very much in the old markets.
Very good. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Andrew Ritchie from Autonomous. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Three very short questions. First of all, on asset management again, the focus is very much on retail net outflows, I guess, in the second half of the year. Can you give us any sense of what's going on the institutional side? I think bringing it right up to date, there has been quite a lot of turnover, not high-profile turnover, but more at individual fund level. What is that doing with respect to your position with consultants and institutional mandates? Maybe just give us some flavor for what's occurring there. And two very quick questions. Just looking at non-life, I just observed Italy, which we had been growing faster than the market, seemed to have shrunk a bit in Q4, and I appreciate the pricing has come off a bit in Italy. Are you being sort of more cautious now in terms of your desire to increase market share there? And final question, I appreciate you're going to give us more detail on capital later in the year, but, I mean, you provided an update of what you did in 2013. I mean, it is still just a good working assumption for 2014 to assume a similar kind of split. In other words, the 2020 kind of split. Thanks.
Well, let me start with the last question. I assume that, let's take the payout ratio out. But that we'll do some investment in organic growth, we'll do some external growth. I've talked about the Vipul exclusive agreement here, that Max will rightly so ask for some risk capital to shift the asset side. I think that is a fair assumption. But I don't want to get you to the point, you know, where you say, okay, then I already know my capital management answer, nothing will change, they will come back with a payout ratio of 40%. I don't want to indicate anything in that direction.
I guess I was just more, it sounds that you feel the opportunities for organic, inorganic, real asset are similar to what they were last year.
Absolutely. I think that we talked about pricing. We talked about our initiatives on the life side, so that's talking to the organic growth. And I think the opportunities, the closer we get to the Solvency II implementation, are going to increase.
Okay.
Andrew, I think that you had the question of the movement of asset management. For the whole year, we had an institutional 6 billion net inflows, but in the last quarter, there were actually some outflows. I think we had two investors who moved in completely different asset classes. One went to real estate, one went to Far East equities. But otherwise, I think our institutional mandates were very stable, with a positive for the whole year. So the net outflows in total were retail driven. And in the last quarter, the Italian P&C business reduced volume by close to 5%. I think there are two effects to consider. On one hand, we have this re-underwriting program running in commercial. So therefore, commercial has certainly lost or given up on some larger contracts which were up for renewal in November, December. And the other point is the automatic renewal for Motor Italy is non-existing anymore. That means we have slightly higher lapses in motor, and I think the effective was in the fourth quarter was a one-off change in the accounting practice, how we now account for motor renewal premium. Now we have to wait until we receive the money physically. I think that were the questions.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Andy Broadfield from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Three questions, please. The first one, just on very quickly on FX, can you give us a sense of the overall bottom line impact you think FX has had in 2013? If there's any guidance or thoughts on 2014 if the world stays as it is. Second question, solvency, sorry to come back to solvency. On the one hand, I'm a bit confused because on the one hand you say really not too worried about solvency too. The quality is what the quality is and it's fine and we're top of the pile. And indeed, I think S&P mark you the highest on pretty much every category amongst all the global composites. Then why are we waiting for conclusion of solvency too before you come out with your capital management plan, given it's doesn't sound like it's the binding constraint. And then the final question, if I may, just on the operating activities, all those things you outline on page 10, which are fantastic, and I think it would be helpful to understand two things. One, some evidence that you would point to on the success of these, I think perhaps some of the some financial metrics there, and also how much of this is extending or developing a lead over peer groups, i.e. improving margins, and how much of this do you think is just the battle that needs to be done to stand still just in a dynamic world?
Yeah, and thanks for the question. The one of the answers that you can draw from this list here is actually on page 11. It shows you how we are making growth against market and how we are improving combined ratios against market. So I understand that there are many more activities, but all is driven at getting us more competitive and more growing. We have the FTE reduction programs. Obviously, they translate into expense savings over time. I've talked about Allianz Re and the Rio program, which is an important one for us from a capital steering point of view, but also from getting our purchase on the insurance side really in place. So maybe in the future I will put a couple of numbers there or symbols, what's addressing what. Thanks for that question. And why are we waiting to cash out before we know exactly what the regulation is going to be? I can tell you I have a supervisory board with somebody who really understands what we are talking about. I need approval not only from the supervisory board for capital management, but also from the annual shareholder meeting. And I will not go into the shareholder meeting and say, I have a good feeling in my tummy, and now this is how we're going to act on this. It's just not working like that.
Yeah, I would have given you the same answer. I made the prediction that it is not the binding constraint, but of course you have first to go through the process.
No.
I think that are two different things.
Now on FX, you've asked, and I think Dieter has made a couple of comments. We lost about 2 billion in revenue, 0.9 is the real number, 400 million in operating profit. Half of that is translation, and the other one is related to investment. And on the net income side, it is a 250 million that we lost through foreign exchange. Okay?
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Atanasio Pantarotas from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking my questions. I have two questions left. One is your life strategy in Germany. I would like to know if you will continue to provide a pretty much high crediting rate to policyholder as you did last November, December, and why you continue to this higher remuneration policyholder strategy. On this question, I relate to the a small question regarding your reinvestment yield in your life German book. You can provide the data for 2013. And the final question is the outlook for the P&C business. I saw in the presentation that, for example, in Germany, you saw that in the first part of the year, the motor renewal were still positive with an hardening trend. Are you feeling that this hardening trend is now fine? So do you expect that in the next year the pricing should be pretty much in line with this year, or you think that there is a room for additional hardening trend? Thank you.
Okay, then I start with the German life business overall. If you think the crediting rate is attractive, I'm happy with that. because it is also perhaps good for the policyholders. Why are we going for that yield? Because we really can afford it. Overall, the total yield on our reserves in Germany comes up to 5.3%. We have that means additional income also for additional buffers. It's a so-called Zusatzreserve. That means in addition what we are paying to the policyholders, we build up additional reserves if the interest rate environment will stay on these low levels for the coming years. Overall, I think it's also serving us very well if I think of the new business. Overall, our competition is getting weaker, and therefore it serves us also in that respect very well if we remain at this level. But that is not a guarantee. This will be the same crediting rate for 2014. I can tell 2015. I can tell you that's the decision of the local management, and then we have to see what we expect on the interest side, on the capital markets. Usually we are acting also accordingly to what we can afford, but also we take into account the outlook of the interest rates.
Sorry, and your investment yield in the life German business in 2013?
The investment yield.
The reinvestment yield. So I think that was 3.6% in 2013.
That was the global life reinvestment yield, and that was
3.7. It's usually a little bit higher in Germany. You can say in average it's 0.2% higher than for the global markets.
Okay, thank you.
And we still see pricing flexibility in the German motor market beyond what we had taken 2015.
So we had a reasonable start in the year 2014.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Paul Deed from RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking my questions. A couple of points, hopefully quick ones on asset management, please. Firstly, the performance stats for both PIMCO and AGI have come down a little bit in the fourth quarter, over 13 over 12 for AGI. Is there any specific reason for this? Is it specific funds that are causing problems? But also, do you feel this has any bearing on whether or not the net flow position is going to improve anytime soon? And then second point also on asset management is just a bit of clarification, please, on the performance fee side of things, because obviously we've seen quite volatile moves there following the private funds that you had in 2012. What's kind of a good rate to think of as a sort of an average level of performance fees going forward, notwithstanding that you might be doing some more of these private funds? Thanks.
Okay, so I think the performance fees in AGI were a bit lower in Q4 compared to last year. I think there were some funds not performing as good as they did before. I think that was related to one US-based equity fund. The performance fees as a whole are very much dominated by the one-off fees from PIMCO. And we would consider for 2013 a normal level more actually in around 300 million, and for the 2014 plan, I would probably start with a smaller number and the outperform on it. Fantastic.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Farooq Hanif from Citi. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. I was quite surprised that you put the issue of sovereign risk having a capital charge presentation. I mean, I know it's on the table and being discussed, but always thought it was a very low probability given inconsistency with other regimes and other industries. I was wondering if you could comment on, do you think there's been a material change in the attitude towards sovereign risk? Secondly, that was a comment to a question. Second question, your $3.3 billion target for the life business is what I personally think stands out the most, because that's your upper end target for life business. The reason why that stands out is because you don't think in the last decade you've actually achieved that. Clearly, materially away from that right now. I was wondering what assumptions would get you to $3.3 billion in life. Thank you.
Maybe I can start with the sovereign charges, so I can add detail a little bit.
And also take the life first, yes.
The sovereign charges are actually coming from discussions that we are having with BaFin. That's the German regulator. We've had similar discussions in Belgium with the regulator. So I think we can't really rule it out. And I don't know whether we should push for charges for the banks on sovereign exposures. Certainly from a competitive point of view, yes. But I think the eruptions in the markets would be huge, and you probably can't face them in at this point in time.
So, I mean, I would be correct, I'm guessing, and you probably said this already, that the majority of the 20-point hit that you describe is coming from that.
Well, that was one of the cases, but look, I can't tell you the likelihood. I think there was a discussion came up in the last couple of months, and it was a discussion that it should affect all internal models and not the standard models. Therefore, as a prudent insurer as we are, put it on the list. What do you expect us to do? And we are certainly discussing here the uncertainties, and we will update you during the years what uncertainties are being closed and which ones are still open. And it will be a journey together, because the final approval process for the internal models is starting April 1, 2015, but for sure we have to complete our calculations all before, so therefore I assume during the year 14 that numbers get more and more stable, but it will be some ups and downs, and we have only started the discussion. There is volatility in the number that you are not starting to try to find an explanation for each two-point movement in the number. And as you see, we take it much more relaxed because it is really not the driving concern. The question on the life profit. First, I said that we move this other asset manager. So that gives already a 100 million reallocation between asset management and life. Then we had short of 150 million Korea, and we are not assuming that this will repeat. Actually, Korea in itself should improve over 2013, otherwise we wouldn't do a restructuring. And also we assume that Germany has very good chance to deliver a higher profit in 2014 and 2013, and that are already three very concrete examples showing you that our numbers are not only dreams, that they also have a real basis.
Sorry to labour the point, but just on the 3.3, the upper end of your target. So, obviously, we have the numbers for the other parts. But so, what is it in Germany that lower reserving for interest rates? What is it that would drive higher IFRS profit to get to your bull case?
We had one off currency losses in the numbers, and also shift policyholder shareholder split. So therefore, I think it's very, very much based on this assumption. And also, with the great inflow we had in 2013, actually we have also a higher asset base.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Mark Thiel from Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you. My first question is on P&C insurance. How do you expect the earnings to develop beyond 2014, given that price increases have already started to slow in the fourth quarter? Secondly, on emerging markets, Dieter said in Turkey the high interest rates offset lower currency, although this is probably slowing down GDP growth and insurance demand. How do you feel about M&A and capital redeployment in emerging markets versus mature markets in general terms? Michael mentioned being smart, but maybe you can share more detailed thoughts with us. Thirdly, can you quantify how you think about the third country equivalent and how it would impact economic solvency? Did you make any specific allowance for globally systematically important insurers? And how much capital do you think this would require at the end?
Maybe I'll start with the M&A side. I mean, we're talking about this, I think, consistently all the time. Say, would be great to do emerging markets was a little bit of a question mark about, pricing levels. And also, lately, I've just given the presentation to the Geneva Association on that, on profitability levels. So I think there's a lure into, higher growth numbers with a lot of risk also on currency movements and political issues. Now, obviously a little crowded in that market with very little supply, on the other hand. But don't get me wrong, if there's something that would be of interest, we would be the first ones to look at it. We just think it's more practical to say, we have some markets where we can do a strategic addition, that is easily integrated, or something where we can use our scale. And that's basically the markets right now. We've seen France, we've seen Belgium, now it's Italy, where there's pressure on other providers and investors to dispose. And I think this is not a bad strategy at all. And by the way, Turkey, I would call an emerging market in this respect. I mean, with 37% of organic growth last year, I think that proves the point.
Yeah, I think actually on the pricing growth in P&C is in the end the question of what is the mixture, and I think you are very much referring to the U.S., which is for us a good market where our global corporate business is very successfully operating for years, and where we have the turnaround case for Fireman Fund. So I think we are on track with our turnaround case, and I think that is still helping us in the year 2014-15. And I think for Germany and France, we have spoken before about the pricing environment. On Solvency II, we are currently not assuming any equivalence with other countries. And based on our portfolio, it would also not have a huge impact. As our U.S. portfolio is dominated by fixed index annuities and not VA business, the difference in the two calculations is not so much. Can we make any assumption on what systemic importance would mean in capital load? Absolutely not. That discussion is in a very, very early phase, and many ideas are floating around, and therefore it is impossible to make any statements on this one. But it just, it's, just, seen is that the capital add-ons are for the non-traditional, non-insurance activities. Our banking operations are very tiny. There might variable annuity is at the moment on this list of non-traditional, and a couple of other small activities for us. So therefore, I can't say whether it would be a number which significant for the group.
But then you haven't included that in the sort of guidance of a 20-30% touch point restatement. That would come.
No, because it is a completely new benchmark. It will be independent of Solvency II. It might be that the new requirement is ending up at 80% of Solvency II, or it might end up 100% of Solvency II. I have no idea.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Thomas Seidel from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Three questions, starting with PIMCO, quite change and management. I wonder what you would say we could lead into, you know, change the strategy of these management changes. This is that PIMCO is now, again, more focusing on the U.S. side, more international in particular. Is there a dedicated strategy to grow into equity more successfully than in the past? Secondly, on the investment side, I think the higher yield you have on real assets, I wonder how the issues you have seen now, example of the gas pipeline, basically reduces the excitement about this asset class. And finally, you mentioned the FTE reduction, cost reduction. Is there any number you would commit to for 2014, how much how we are going to expect in terms of lower expenses for Allianz?
Then I would like to start with PIMCO. Yes, I think the management changes are reflecting deeper diversification in asset classes. And we, for the first time now, have a co-deputy or deputy in for the asset class of equities, new hire. But I think overall it's good to, you know, broaden the attention of the investment management side, and you've seen some great names there. But I also think that it's significant that we've finally made the split between the investment side and the management side, because the company has grown to a degree where I think that was good and necessary. And also it's reflecting a regional diversification, because it may look American at the first view, but we have a French lady, we have a UK guy who's taking care of the Asian investments. We have Doug Hodge on top, who was responsible for the Asian build-up. So I think overall, yes, it's reflecting that diversity of PIMCO much better, and it also gives us better diversification when it comes to management responsibilities.
Okay. You asked about gas pipeline. I think you think of gas, that our investment there overall, and we invest in infrastructure. Not only we have regulated assets, but also in other fields. As an example, Network Gas is an example. There we have long-term contracts with Gazprom. That means it is not regulated. Usually you should think that your regulated assets are more secure. Unfortunately, that has proven wrong in Norway, but we are in discussion, as you know, and also suing the government, therefore to see what is the outcome overall. In the EU and also in Germany, EU, like mentioned, the Green Book for long-term investments, that was also stated there that we need this kind of security as a long-term investor, otherwise the yields will go up, and that makes it more difficult than for the countries to finance their infrastructure. Overall, what is our out of that? I think we have to diversify. We should not put all the eggs into one basket. That's important overall, but we should also diversify region-wise. I think that's very important for infrastructure.
Okay. You asked for the restructuring charges. I can only give you at this point in time the FTE numbers. So there's the Allianz banking activity was 400 FTE, Korea was 250, and Italy and Benelux was around 100 each. And my assumption at this point in time is that these people will leave early 2014. So then we would get the full benefit, but that obviously is now a question of implementation because the restructuring charges, at least for Benelux and Italy, have only been taken in Korea in December 2013.
Okay. And on top comes the data center consolidation, but we don't have a number on this one. It's more infrastructure cost saving.
Okay. So it sounds like it's more coming over the next years rather than 40.
The data consolidation, definitely, yes.
Data center consolidation is split over 14, 15, 16, where the numbers Michael mentioned before are 14.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Nick Holmes from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. Just a couple of questions. The first one is coming back on solvency two. Just wondered, do you have a sense of where your 180% solvency two indication that you've given might possibly come out in terms of credit ratings? Bit of an unfair question that you're not a credit rating agency, but I mean, presumably 180% would equal a double A rating. Presumably you would agree with that. But any ideas for where the cutoff might be? And then second question is, I hope, a little bit easier to answer, which is on German life. Wondered whether you can tell us what addition you made to the ZZR in 2013, and if this was still fully funded by the RFB. And if so, how much buffer you have with the RFB before you actually need to make shareholder contributions. Thank you.
Okay, so let's start with ZZR in Germany. It was in 2013 a 2.4 billion euro contribution, because we used as a reference rate 3.41. With the current interest rate movement, it is probably increasing to 3 billion in the year 14, and I think we can fully finance it out of the existing buffer. We are not concerned about it. So at the moment, when we come to the rating and the connection to Solvency II, Standard & Poor's have recognized our internal model and as well as our excellent risk management activities. In their current rating, they use 85% of the Standard & Poor's standard spreadsheet and 15% of our internal model. I would assume when Solvency II comes really in place and is the required solvency calculation, Standard & Poor's might even move to a bigger recognition of the Solvency II model, and that would then actually probably also under rating considerations improve our position and not worsening it.
Okay.
What you wanted to hear.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. Items that you would say S&P will look more favorably on within Solvency II, you know, what items might actually change their credit assessment?
Very simple. When it is an approved model by the regulator, it has more gravitas than it has as long as it is just our own internal model.
Yeah. Yes, I follow that. Yeah.
Very straightforward.
Okay. Can I just quickly follow up on the RFP and the ZZR? Max, are you saying that the RFP is so large that there is no near-term requirement to fund the ZZR at all? I mean, you said clearly for 2014 you're very happy, but can we say the same going out for a few more years after that?
To say it a little bit differently, our ambition is to finance that with the current income and not with the RFP. That means usually we should not take money from the RFP to finance the ZR. That usually, and that is referring to the high investment income we still have, and I explained to you the investment income right now is much higher overall than what we need for the crediting rate. That is also because we are realizing hidden reserves on the asset side, and usually that is also to finance the ZZR. Usually we would not like to shrink the RFP to finance the ZZR.
Okay, so it's through the function of the realization of gains.
Yes, and the other investment income we have right now.
Yes, understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Michael Haid from MainFirst Bank. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking the questions. Two questions. First, on German Life 2013, I would like to get a better understanding of what is going on in terms of a breakdown of new business. Could you give us a breakdown? How much is corporate life versus individual life? How much is the capitalization product? And also, can you give us an idea how much there is still from the traditional life product new business and how much from the new product Perspektive? The second question, very simple, on asset management. You mentioned the gross margin for the fourth quarter being 45.5 basis points higher than the average for 2013. Is it fair to assume for 2014 that the 45.5 would be a run rate?
Okay, Michael, so let's start with asset management. That is easy. That was very much the reason why I highlighted the Q4 number, because that's a good starting point for the year 2014. On Germany Life, the new business mix. Well, our growth at in year was very much linked to single premium products. And I think the new business, I think the best way to describe it is half and half between retail and group business. And within the retail business, our new product generation, which is called Index Connect, is a hybrid product, almost, I would say, a German adoption of the fixed index annuity business from the U.S., with our Perspektive, which is a new product which has lower guarantees and more upside for the customer. This new product generation makes 43-44% of the retail sales, and the rest are the traditional annuity products.
And the capitalization product?
29% of the single premium business.
Single premium business. And here the margin is very low, obviously, I guess.
No, not really. If you think of the short-term one, we pay only an interest of 1.1% on that, but we usually invest it long-term.
I think it fits very well in our duration management and optimization. At the current level, we are right in this product. That is a nice add-on from a profit point of view.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Frank Kopfinger from Commerzbank. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I have two questions as well. My first question is on asset management, especially on Allianz Global Investors. I saw that in Q4 your cost-income ratio was 76.6% there. Could you comment on the drivers of this development and also comment on whether you still stick to 65%.
Sorry, percent. I acoustically catch the question. Could you please repeat it?
Yeah, sure. Sorry. I realize that within your Allianz Global Investors segment, you had a cost-to-income ratio of 76.6%. And could you comment on the drivers behind this development and also comment on how this looks in relation to your 65% target overall? And the second question is on your CEE operations. I saw that you had a combined ratio of 99.5% for the full year. Could you comment there on the drivers behind this, especially in terms of which were the drivers for this deterioration and what your expectations would be going forward?
Well, I think we addressed the CEE, Eastern Europe, combined ratio in one of the questions. We have an extraordinary negative result in Russia, where we had to book a very bad combined ratio on the motor side. That's really the only driver of this, say, worsening of our operating profit there. And I've also said that for the next year, we will at least half that negative impact on operating profit, so we'll return back to, I think, good numbers.
I think in Allianz Global Investors, we are probably not yet allocating really the bonuses evenly over the quarter, so that Q4 has always more of bonus part. But in the previous quarter, we had a provision release on the restructuring programs we had before. Therefore, the comparison Q3 to Q4 is skewed by the two things. And also, as I said, performance fees were a bit lower this year than the year before.
And maybe to come back to this Russian issue, just to get a little light on that, that is driven by a change in legislation when it comes to questions like MTPL and bodily injury.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question now from Michael Huttner. Please go ahead.
That's my day. So, two questions. On the reinsurance costs less. Is there what's the amount of benefit or figure or think for which way it's going? And then the public question probably says things are relevant. What's the exposure to Turkey in terms of balance sheets? Thank you.
Okay, Michael, the reinsurance for 2014, I can't tell you how much we will save in premium because we are not renewing all programs on January 1. We have, of course, scheduled the renewals during the whole year, and that is then more a question for the following quarters. But maybe what I should have said before, actually, is while our gross written premium did shrink in nominal numbers by 0.7%, our net earned premium was actually up by 0.8%. So quite already some progress in retaining more of the business and doing less reinsurance, and that was during 2013. And as we have discussed in the third quarter, that trend will continue in the into 2014 and 15. In Turkey, our balance sheet exposure, well, it's the acquisition cost of Yapı Kredi plus the original investments in our old business, that is roughly some 200, 300 million euros on top. And the change in exchange rate is always booked in OCI. And I said that we lost in net equity 1.2 billion euros due to foreign currency. Of course, the Turkish investments, so Yapı Kredi and the original one, are both included in this number of 1.2 billion.
And just in terms of bonds, do you have any government?
You mean bonds held in other subsidiaries, Turkish lira? Well, that is a very specific question, and I'm not sure.
It is between zero and near to zero. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Peter Max. It is 27 minutes past four, so we have time to take one last question.
Okay, perfect. We actually only have one further question in the queue now, and that is from Vinod Malhotra from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
No, that was the final thinking. Thank you very much. Just I wanted to ask on the emerging market volatility we saw in earlier last month, and obviously we've heard it with reference to both the German life emerging market exposure a little bit there, then also on the non-core in the asset management PIMCO side, where Dieter, we've heard you talk about emerging market volatility. Also, fourth quarter wasn't a very good for non-core. Could you just give us some more comfort on how the last month's volatility would have impacted your thinking, this outlook? That's the first question. Second question is just on interest rate risks. Just a quick observation that the economic solvency sensitivity to 100 basis points move up has been falling through the year. In 2Q it was 20 points, and 3Q it was 12, and 4Q it was 8. Is it something that you're consciously putting in place in terms of some hedges, or just a quick comment, please? Thank you.
Vinit, you have lost me a little bit on your emerging market strategy, but maybe, Max, if you want to take this, yeah.
Yes, I think our overall exposure in emerging markets, if I think of bonds, is now 14 billion. That is what we put in euro portfolios, 14 billion thereof is more than 6 billion in local currency, and we lost on that, and that's impact on the operating profit, 128 million last year. Overall, we reduced the currency risk from there, but as you can see from market development in January, mainly there were losses on the currency side, the countries who had a current deficit, that means accounting deficit, that means Brazil as an example, and Turkey. Overall, there we do not have too much, only to say that. Overall, but take into account that still the interest rates are really high, in average for the emerging market bonds, that includes also the emerging market bonds that has been issued in euro or US, but on average they have come up to 6.2% in comparison to what you get usually in euro terms, that is around 2%. And therefore, it's a bit attractive, but we also have to take into account the higher volatility. We too, therefore, we would not like to go now for more exposure into emerging markets. We have to observe that, I think, very thoroughly.
Yeah, I was just asking from the PIMCO non-core products, because we've heard that mentioned in the context earlier in 3Q, I think.
But I did not link it to emerging markets, therefore, as you lost me with the question.
Okay.
So that, therefore, I could not combine.
I was the one. I was mentioning that in the new management structure, we have one person, that's Mr. Balls out of UK, who's dealing with emerging market debt, and we have Doug, who has been running the Asian business for PIMCO. But that was not a suggestion that we're increasing there.
And it is not linked to. Therefore,
Thanks.
Well, I think when you look at how our duration gap in the life segment has moved during 2013, when it gets smaller, the interest rate sensitivity is getting lower. That is why we are showing as an indicator. The two KPIs I think are matching very nicely here.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
Tav. Thanks everybody for joining the call. Say goodbye to everybody and wish you a very pleasant remaining afternoon.
Thank you.